Hi everyone, welcome to Psychedelic Science Conference. We are here to witness an historic event. We have, I think, 11,000 people, attendees, coming to learn more about psychedelic and their benefits and therapeutic use. We're here for the next 3 days intensely, speaking to many leaders in the space and bringing you so much more news and updates. So stay tuned. Hi everyone, welcome to Psychedelic Conversations. I am thrilled to be sharing this interview with you. Today I have in conversation with me Charles Lazarus, a Jamaican native and the visionary founder of Rose Hill Apothecary. He has dedicated his entire adult life to farming and exporting agricultural goods, amassing vast knowledge and expertise in the process. In 2015, he boldly ventured into the uncharted territory of psilocybin mushroom cultivation, which led to commercial sales in 2018, boasting over 16 years of experience in genetic development, cultivation, extraction, and logistics in the domain of agriculture. His unmatched expertise sets him apart as a true master of his craft. Under Charles' leadership, Rose Hill Apothecary achieved an unprecedented milestone as the first entity to legally export psilocybin mushrooms on the planet. He is our first mushroom cultivator guest on our podcast, and I'm really excited to hear your feedback. Hope you guys enjoy this episode, and I will see you on the next one.
So in Jamaica, I live in Jamaica, and back in when I was a kid, cannabis, ganja culture, was definitely a very classist thing, right? So if you weren't allowed to smoke ganja, you had to, drink rum or sugarcane rum or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, my father had a friend that was from the United States, and he was living in Jamaica as a Rasta man. And we would hang out with him, and he inspired me to play the guitar, but he spoke about mushrooms. So when I was old enough, I took mushrooms for the first time. We went wild harvesting, myself and my friends. We found it, we ate, by today's measure, it must have been 7 grams each. It was a lot. Because we didn't know. We were just like, oh, you have to eat a lot. And it was great. I mean, it was a lot. We overdid it, but they were really
good. Was that a regular thing, or was it one-off?
It wasn't super regular because we were 16. Uh-huh. I mean, I'm 47 now, so it's been a long time of mushroom eating. It wasn't all the time. I mean, we had to be down in that place, and it was seasonal because it was when the rains came and the cow poops, and so you had to catch it 3 days after. It was a thing. Mm-hmm. You had to plan for it, right? So anyway, I went through many years of enjoying and eating mushrooms, kind of overdoing it more, because I didn't know, okay, I'm gonna weigh it on a scale, and it wasn't like, sure. And then yes, really loved them, and joined a band, played professionally for about 15 years touring, and in that time fell back in love with mushrooms. But now I learned that there were all these other mushrooms, not just our wild harvested ones, and I wanted some of those at home, so I did what you said, and I decided I would try to grow them. Yeah, then that's how that journey went. We were at Burning Man performing. Somebody gave me some type of mushroom, and I was like, oh, I have to have this in Jamaica. That was maybe 2012.
Yeah.
And then grew. You grow a lot, right? You can't consume everything you grow, even when a small thing. So then friends, family, people started growing more. It mushroomed,
Uh-huh.
And then
it just became a thing.
It became a thing, yeah. Mm-hmm. When we were doing products probably without a label from 2014, we were doing capsules. And then it evolved and it evolved and it evolved. And in about 20, maybe it was during the pandemic, I turned to Kevin, my business partner, and I'm like, he's a brilliant marketer. And I was like, hey, we should present metal. And then we came up with the brand Patu, which is the Jamaican word for owl. And in the overseas behind the veil, we thought it would be quite profound. So we launched Tattoo, and it was the first consumer product on the market. And now it's the largest in Jamaica now. But similar to what you were talking about earlier, you know, we had mushrooms. All the these retreats are popping up all over Jamaica, you know, psychedelic tourism. This is going, this is 10 years now this has been going on. So we would provide medicine to people that were doing retreats.
Right.
So as we started growing more, then, you know, you will come to me and you will say, hey, Charles, the medicine from the last time, you know, I wish it was more like this. And I'd be like, well, let's try and get it that way for you. So we started looking at the personality of different fruits. And then we would grow specific medicine for specific retreats. Is it experiential? Is it trauma? Is it PTSD? Like, what are you looking for?
I was going to say that, yeah.
What are you looking for?
Yeah, different strains for different things. Right?
His name is First Man, and he holds ceremony at the Rastafari Indigenous Village in Montego Bay. He does not like herding cats. He doesn't want medicine where everyone's like walking around.
All over the place.
Yeah, he wants them on the ground.
Contain it.
Yeah. So the medicine we get for him does that. Whereas, you know, I have another friend who does, he moves people through the land in the full moon as like a fun thing that he does. He doesn't want you on the ground.
Like a nature connection.
Correct. Correct.
That kind of.
So just different medicine. And then working with the various retreats like Beckley, we do medicine for, you know, Rastafari Indigenous Village, you know, Atmon, our own retreats that we just launched, Wan retreats. Mm-hmm. So yeah, because we're working with different people and they have different desires, we then focused on specific fruits and then learning to make the most of those fruits.
Right.
Like, what is it in the substrates that lead to this, and collecting all of this anecdotal information. And then we funnel that knowledge into the products. So,
sounds wonderful. Thank you for starting with your personal story.
Yeah.
I think it's it's the fun part, you know, our listeners. So I just want to quickly say a few things about you to our listeners, because they always love to know, obviously, what brings you to this work, and then what are you doing as a company, as an individual. So you're one of the co-founders of Rose Hill, right?
That's right.
Premium cultivator and supplier of psilocybin products and biomass for research partners and brands, and anchored by core values of compassion, respect, and innovation. So you are also the first company to legally transport to Canada.
Mm-hmm.
How does that make you feel, leading the way?
I think just like with everything in the industry so far, we're just going one step in front of the other. So at some point I look back and I'm like, oh, that was really cool. I mean, at the time it was great. And then that was the win of the day. And then the next day there was another win and another win. And yeah. Right. But I mean, it takes just us in Jamaica, we can't achieve an export by ourselves. You have to work in tandem with someone in that country that's going to do all the filings with Health Canada. And then in Jamaica, and then we have to work as a team to make that happen. Right. The first export was only 2 kilos. The second one was 10. And then the third was like 20. And then the issues at the time, because they weren't really, it's a controlled substance. They're expecting to get, you know, say it's like a pill or something. Well, there's 10 pills. If you have 9 pills, that's not what's on the permit. If you have 11 pills, then you're smuggling, because that's one extra pill. So when you bring it to biomass, it's kind of tricky, because they're not necessarily caring about the weight that you're shipping. They care about the active compound of psilocybin and psilocin in it, but it's organic. I can't guarantee you it's exactly going to be to the perfect milligram.
Yeah.
So that was very challenging until they were more flexible in how they viewed things. But it was great. I mean, coming from Jamaica, you know, I don't want to have a problem shipping something, a compound, I can get me in trouble. So it was nerve-wracking on my end.
Absolutely, I can imagine. I went to a lecture or conference in London by a group of people from Imperial College. You know, they do research and studies. And one of the speakers, we laughed so hard, he said, the substance that they used for the research It was held in a specific location in the building with like five different locks. And
yeah.
he said it would be easy if I just walked down the road and get this,
yeah.
than actually go to that yeah. cabinet. It's a bit like that. So the whole procedures and the restrictions and everything is making it absurd.
That is true. To having to jump through hoops. Cuts. Mm-hmm. I mean, what made it valuable to the company we shipped for is that you have to have legal chain of custody yeah. so that everything that you do with the biomass moving forward is theoretically legal. So yes, you could go down the street and you can get it, but then the source isn't legal. So because yeah. Jamaica just happened to be legal,
yes.
then anything that's produced there starts with a legal chain of custody.
Yes.
custody. So it's changing because now, of course, you can do that in Canada. So yeah. they would just get someone who was licensed down the street.
Yes.
You know, rather than necessarily coming to all the way to Jamaica. We have to find new and interesting ways to keep Jamaica relevant as a biomass exporter.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just so interested that it's legal and you guys are one of the largest sort of cultivators.
We do well. We're pretty big.
That's really remarkable.
I mean, I should say, it's only fair to say that I visit facilities in other places in the world that are bigger than our facility.
Right.
It's just that our facility is in a legal jurisdiction.
Yeah.
Right? So when I have issues, because I have issues, we all have issues,
yeah.
I will reach out to someone in Oregon or Olympia, Washington or British Columbia or somewhere that I'm like, hey, I'm having a problem. I don't know why. How can you help me?
Yeah.
And fortunately, everyone's very helpful, you know?
Yeah.
Because I don't know anyone that has it fully dialed in.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. We're in still very much uncertain waters, right? With everything. So, Jamaica. So you work with, Beckley is one of my favorite.
Yeah, I like them.
So too. Yeah, there are lots of retreats happening. Actually, I was also reached out by a retreat saying, would I be interested in moving over there as a therapist to join the team. And I was like, wow, this is wild to think, just to think, to just drop everything, go there. But I can understand it's, you know, we still have to tiptoe and be careful navigating the legal system, the locations where the, retreat locations. But someone like Beckley Foundation, they have so much credibility, so much behind them that it just makes them more reliable.
Yeah, they're right? Great.
And I just wanted to ask you about so how do you guys come to knowing the strains, which is doing what kind of effects? And
Working with people like yourself, you know? So obviously I cannot consume mushrooms all day, every day for the whole year. I would get nothing done. So if you are working with a retreat, so we are a retreat, one retreat, and you're a practitioner at one retreat, right? And I'm working with you, and you're going to sit with, over the course of the year, 500 people, right? Well, I have that relationship with you, and you are giving me feedback, which you are collecting also from the people that that you're sitting with. And we gather that anecdotal information.
Yeah.
And look at the similarities. And of course, I'm going to consume our own medicine. And then also the changes. So it's really years and years and hundreds, maybe thousands of people at this point of just anecdotal information. And then, of course, we have our social media and our website where people who purchase our products send feedback, which is really great because it's like you're doing this thing and then you're impacting lives and then you're getting that firsthand thank you about what happened. And that is what really keeps you going.
Yeah.
More so than first export. Like, that's whatever, you know?
Yeah.
It's the people that you're impacting.
Yeah.
And how well. And then the communication, you know, like people want to be able to speak to a person about their experience.
Yes.
Which is, I love doing it, but it does take up a lot of bandwidth.
Yes.
Communicating constantly.
I
have to separate like phones now. I'm like, I'll do it at a certain time of day. I'm like, how's everything going with your protocol? Like your microdosing protocol. How's everything going? Oh, this is happening. Okay, that's really great. Can you answer these questions for me? And I'll send off a form. And then we will look at, because even our microdosing blend, we have our own I play around with different blends, like of different fruits, different ratios of different fruits. You know, so if you get this blend and you report that you were very tired, I was lethargic. I felt good, but I was lethargic.
I see.
Because the other thing is, people say microdose, but what they really mean is a low dose.
Okay. Yeah. It's so true.
They want to feel it.
Feel something.
No, they want to feel it. Or else it doesn't work.
Yeah. It's a mirror of Western thinking, right?
Yeah.
Because when you take a pill, it's supposed to do something for you.
Yeah, they want to feel it.
Yeah.
I mean, it feels good, so.
Yeah, for sure. So what strains are the most popular for microdosers? Like among the microdosers, what strain do they prefer?
There's a strain called Shakti, which I really enjoy growing.
Uh-huh.
And of course, everyone knows the Penis Envy strains. So yeah, what you have to know is that it starts out as one thing.
Yeah.
But as you take cuts from the mycelium on petri dishes,
mm-hmm.
it changes. It can change.
Yeah.
So how that mycelium expresses in a fruit can be different. So you could consume my Shakti, and it could be very different than John's Shakti.
Right.
Yeah, and then what is John feeding the mushroom? Like, you know, we have some mushrooms that, I'm in Jamaica, I grew up eating dung lovers, you know, like pile of cow poop, Panellaea cyanescens or cubensis, I like those.
Sure.
Rich biodiversity, very different fruit.
Uh-huh.
But then like a Penis Envy is not necessarily a dung lover. So you can grow that in
an environment of like
straight coca core, you know? So you starve it actually. If you give it too much greater biodiversity, it will just, the mycelium will just sit there and there'll be never any fruits because the mycelium is going, oh, I've got everything I need here, I'm chilling. You got to starve it, like almost give it nothing. So when it spreads out, it goes, there's nothing here. I'm going to die any minute now. I need to put out some fruits and fulfill my
continue the survival of the strain.
So like things like
very
that. Things like that. You need to know, okay, I don't have all year to wait on Penis Envy. So going back to the strains, there's a Shakti that I like to grow from microdosing. There's an Enigma that I like. It's very strong, takes time, and I can be here at this conference with you. And the harvest window could be weeks, whereas with mushrooms, it's usually like a couple hours. We have to harvest now because spores are going to drop at this time. So, and then of course there's a Jamaican cubensis which I cultivate inside, which I just love because it's Jamaican and so am I.
Yeah. Okay. Great. There's a connection there. Yeah. There's a sentimental connection.
That's one we would take.
Yeah. So I know about mushrooms that they kind of the environment can leave an imprint. So they kind of feed on the energetical space that they grow in. So this is a really intricate work that you're doing, understanding it at this level. I know there are lots of amazing mycologists out there. I know personally, and I met so many of them. We have one in London, homegrown.
Sure.
He's great. His roots are also from Africa. And he says, you know, it's about connection, respect, relationship, more than what kind of substrate you're growing them on.
Yeah.
I really find that very fascinating and interesting. I think a lot of our listeners need to know that growing is not just picking up a bag or spores or just putting it together, right? It's more about your relationship, your environment you're creating for them. And that's why, you know, we always warn our community members who are purchasing medicine, I call them medicine, by the way, all kinds of resources. You know, I always say you need to know where they are, how they are being cultivated. So what are your thoughts on this?
Well, it's, I agree. Yeah. It's not something I can validate scientifically on a piece of paper.
No.
And I know people really like that. Yeah. So we just bridge the gap of our little kooky crazy ways and what people want to hear. Like a really good example of it is when you know, okay, fine, we have 50 to 100 strains in a library somewhere. You cannot grow 50 to 100. Like that's like raising 50 to 100 children. You don't have the bandwidth for that, right? Like you need to spend time with the ones that you are gonna, that you connect with that you enjoy growing and you'll get the most out of those.
That I love. Yeah, I'm glad you speak to that. I think, again, coming back to this consumer mindset, right? In the West, we're just so burdened with this consumer mindset that we want to try. It's like there's a term we use, like psychedelic shopping.
Okay.
They just want to try every single strain, compare. It's like a mission.
People love that. It's human nature, though.
Yeah, consumerism.
Yeah, I try not to get people bogged down in strains and leave them with experiences, because they apply this predisposed expectation to a strain, and it's not necessarily true. If you go in with that, did you ever see it was The Empire Strikes Back, the movie? Yoda is training Luke, and he takes him to this cave, and Luke says he wants to go into the cave. Yoda says, really not ready for the cave. He goes, yeah, but I want to. What would I find in there? And he goes, only what you bring with you.
I love that.
Yeah, only what you bring with you. And he goes in and he finds Darth Vader and blah, 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 blah. But the point is,
yeah,
you're going to find what you bring with you. That's what's in the cave. So if you kind of go into a psychedelic experience with a predisposition that you've placed because you think this strain does this and that strain does that, you're probably going to find that, you know?
I'm so happy you speak to this as a cultivator, someone who's in the thick of it, growing and communicating and connecting. I have this theory. I don't know what you think of it. I always say, when people ask me about what strain is best for microdosing, I'm always say, you're the container. Mm-hmm. So you're the best strain first.
Yeah.
You're the container that the medicine interacts with. So let's focus here.
Yeah.
For me, strains, all the different medicines. I mean, even like ayahuasca, San Pedro, they say, oh, should I start with psilocybin? Because everybody said ayahuasca is really hardcore. I'm like, no. Mm-hmm. I see as they are just doors, different doors, and they'll take you to the same place, which comes back to what you said, to your container,
right?
What you bring into the cave, right?
Yeah.
So this is my understanding as well when it comes to strains. I try and tell them, don't be too fixated on the strain. Let's focus on your life.
Mm-hmm.
We need to put that on the microscope first. Yeah.
That's the right word, fixated. Don't be fixated. Dose is another one people get really fixated on.
On doses, yes.
So they go, well, is it 0.2? And I'm like, dude, just pinch off a piece of the mushroom and eat it, right? And they're like, but how would I know the exact? I'm like, it's not like that. First of all, in a flush of mushrooms, one of them can be a dud.
Yes.
You know, like some of them are stronger than some of them. And I have to say, like, don't get bogged down in that. You know, is it exactly? I'm like, yeah, some days you'll feel this way and some days you might not feel this way, but the medicine's still working.
That seems to be a very alien thing to understand for many people. Yeah. So glad. I keep reinforcing this conversation in a similar fashion, because I think we need to let go of this fixation and really kind of commune. I like the word communing with the medicine rather than consumer ingest.
Yeah. I think the other thing of note too with the people that consume our microdoses and that I have to communicate with is it's not a magic pill. It's not like, oh, you're microdosing, I know everything is just going to be great.
Yes.
Yeah, you'll feel great. But to me, it's you're creating this window in which you can have a bit of relief so that you can start enacting change in your life at large, which will ultimately lead to a more positive place, better sleep or more time with the kids. But you can't just take mushrooms and think that everything's just gonna be, you know, you got to put the phone outside when you go to bed. You've got to get rid of bad habits, bring in some good habits. It's not just, I think that does come from that pill mentality.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Do all those other things first, and then the change is slow process. Yeah, I really love that. Another question I have for you is the company name, Rose Hill.
Right.
Very interesting. Yeah. How did that come up?
So my home is called Rose Hill. And it was acquired by my grandfather in the 70s. Jamaica was going through a very strange, weird sociopolitical time. Lots of people were leaving Jamaica for England and Canada. And
yeah.
He stayed in Jamaica and he acquired this really old great house. It's a very old great house. So in fact, this year, the house, my house is turns 300. It was built in 1723 and it's a Rose Hill estate. And I grew up there from the, you know, we moved there in the late 70s. So when I was about 2 years old. And I've been there my whole life. It's a very powerful place.
Yeah.
There's a lot of energy. I mean, in those days, they didn't just build because that was the space they had. They had lots of space.
Yeah.
So things were placed
specifically
according to stars and, you know, with compass points and whatnot. So I love it there. I'm probably going to haunt it when it's over. This time is over. I feel as if the veil between the dimensions is thin at Rose Hill.
Wow.
It doesn't take much to journey at Rose Hill. So I produce there in one of the, it's a big property, it's 235 acres, right?
Wow.
And a lot of it's just, you know, it used to be a pimento plantation and unfortunately in my generation, I've allowed that to fall to crap. I need to really focus on it, but it's a lot. But I do cultivate there and I do like a little walk you can take and go around the property and just be in nature, you know. Patu is we have a chocolate bar as well, which we control 15 acres of cacao on the east coast of the island.
Mm-hmm.
And we do all of the harvesting, roasting, fermenting, grinding, all of that of the cacao. And then we combine it with our mushrooms and then we make chocolate. It's really awesome. Very awesome, right?
So okay, we might have to travel.
No, man, it's awesome.
We want to take a trip to Jamaica.
I don't know anyone else that does that. We can do that because Jamaica is the third best cacao.
Yes.
Supposedly, it's third best cacao on the planet, right? So
it's okay. You can be biased.
Supposedly.
Okay.
And it's illegal. So instead of melting some chocolate that someone imported from Belgium or something.
Somewhere else.
Yeah, we make mushroom chocolate. You know, like it's grown, the grinding takes place together. It's Jamaican genetics, it's Jamaican cacao. And then also because of the price point of a chocolate bar, we can put the very best cacao beans in there. Beans that you wouldn't even put in a regular chocolate bar because then the price point would be so high that people would be like, I'm not spending this on a chocolate bar. But they're not buying a chocolate bar, they're buying an experience. So the threshold of what the consumer would pay goes up. Anyway, point is, we're proud of it. And we do grow. I've just started planting coca trees on a property as well so that we can, instead of having to, you know, go all the way and
have it all there, you know, in the property, in the land.
And it's really great to be in, you know, in the house and, you know, step outside and go over to the facility in the middle of the night and harvest or do work in the late hours when it's cooler.
Exactly.
Yeah, to live there as well as work there. It's great.
It's almost like a dream.
Yeah, we made it.
You live in a dream.
Yeah, yes, we made it that way, though. We had to make it that way. First of all, if you have to get in your car and drive to your mushroom growing facility, that really takes the fun out of it because it does happen at strange times. Yes. You know, it happened. The mushroom says it's time to harvest.
It's just a pain,
and it would be a pain.
Yeah.
You know, and when people say, like, people that don't cultivate say, oh, we want to set up a cultivation and we want your help. And I'm like, no, that's like the drive, no way.
Yeah.
You're on your own. Figure it out. Figure it out the way we did. Just figure it out.
That's so wonderful. And thank you for speaking all of this. I think our listeners would appreciate
it.
Because there's a lot of like a behind the scenes conversations happening here. Things are sharing. It's not very out in the mainstream.
Okay, well, that's the fun.
Yeah, that's the one fun part, and this is why we do what we do. Thank you so much for your time. There's so many things I can ask you, but I'm thinking we should have you back as a returning customer.
Anytime you want.
So we often do a lot of Zoom live or Zoom call.
That'd be great.
Yeah, Zoom connection. So sure to have you back. And before we let you go, what would you say to our listeners? What's your offerings, new projects, and what are you working on?
Well,
yeah.
We are currently submitting for licenses for cultivation in Oregon.
Okay.
We don't know exactly what it looks like. It's shifting a lot over there. but it's just fascinating, and we want to understand, and the best way to understand is to do things. So who knows what that looks like. Maybe we'll be able to produce our Jamaican style products stateside or in Canada or wherever medicine is needed. That's exciting.
Yeah.
And then my business partner, Kevin, who is not here, he's in Jamaica right now. We have our first retreat. He's very passionate about the retreat offering, one retreat.
Yes.
That's very exciting as well for us.
Amazing.
And then,
keep moving forward.
Yeah, for the people, yep. I would say there's no health without mental health, so you got to work on yourself and constantly evolve, you know?
Yeah, keep moving forward. Thank you so much for all the work you're doing and what you bring to this world. This is a time of seeking for the original medicine. I start to call it the original medicine now.
Yeah.
I'm going to stop saying holistic or alternative.
I like that.
It's the original medicine. I think we're returning.
I have to borrow that.
Yeah.
I credit you.
Original okay, thanks.
Medicine.
Thank you so much. All right. Wonderful. Thank you, John. All right. And all the best.
Take care.
Yeah. We'll have you back very soon. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Hope you guys enjoyed. Surely, Charles will be an in-house guest going forward, and we'll have his links, website, everything that you guys can connect with, and I'll see you on the next one.
And they can come visit us in Jamaica.
Sure do, yes. We'll also add information. And I'll see you guys on the next one. Thank you. Bye for now.